time for Lickin' on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Good to have you with us, everybody. Happy Memorial Day. Celebrating, is that the right word? I mean, it's honoring is probably the better word. The sacrifice that so many have made so that we enjoy our freedom. Free press, of which we're a big part of. We're grateful to have the opportunity to speak uncensored. But today it's fitting, with it being Memorial Day, that we have a government agency being represented in the Hot Topic segment. We've got Michael Huff joining us from Jenny May. Very excited about all that's going on. We're going to be talking about the recent white paper that Jenny May published, Knowing Jenny May 2020. It's the path ahead, the road ahead for Jenny May and a lot of the initiatives that are going on. And I'm really excited about this segment. This past week, I spoke in Atlanta Mortgage Professionals Networking Association, and I was so impressed with the caliber of individuals there. But Phil Rosario, MCT, and myself, and Seth Sprague from Phoenix Capital were on the panel. We had more fun. Now, part of it is because of Loretta, the job she did moderating this thing, but it was just an amazing discussion. But Seth and I really had a fun time reminding all the lenders there how important it is to be stress testing your business. And that's one of the things we're going to be talking about in the Hot Topic segment with Michael, is the importance of that and how Jenny May is really paying attention to it. So for all you mortgage bankers that have a Jenny May approval, or all you mortgage bankers, whether you're Jenny May approved, Fannie May approved, you should be stress testing, because some stress lies ahead. And we're going to be talking about that in the programs coming up, a lot more, and what you can do to adjust. But anyway, stay tuned all the way through to the Hot Topic segment, where we will have Michael Huff on the program. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals, and we're grateful to have you as our listener. And thanks for telling others about this podcast. We are very well known in the industry already, but I want to make sure everyone in the industry is aware of this information being presented here. It's a good overview of all that's happening, and our commitment again is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. So I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America, Arch MI, the creator of the innovative RateStar program, Black Knight, the leading provider of integrated software and data analytics solutions. Man, there's some interesting stuff. Alan Pollock in the tech segment is going to be giving you an update on another acquisition Black Knight made. Tease you with that one. And then also Open Mortgage, the leading buyer of reverse mortgage and the home of the top LOs in the country. Also, Lenders One and the Mortgage Collaborative. These two collaboratives, which we are members of, both from the podcast standpoint as well as the Transformational Mortgage Solutions, we're members of both these co-ops. And what these two co-ops do, independent of each other, is create opportunities for mortgage professionals in the industry to really connect and form meaningful relationships. And it is so much about a relationship. They said it's what you know versus who you know. And I think it's important you know this business, know it well. It's also really important that you understand who's making things happen in the background. So anyway, be sure to check out both of them, Lenders One and the Mortgage Collaborative. Also, a special thank you goes to Velma, a fast, efficient, effective way of getting your message out to your customers. We use it for the podcast, get the message out. Thanks to Brett Emler and team. They do a great job. Also to Knowledge Coop, Ken Perry and Nathan Nottingham. They're at Knowledge Coop. They do an innovative way, a fun, easy way to do training for mortgage lenders. Grateful to have them as sponsors. And as we talk each week, a special thank you goes out to Alice, Andy, Joe, and Alan. So anyway, it's good to have you all with us. Let's run over to Rob Van Raphorst and get an update from the MBA. Rob?
Hi, I'm Rob Van Raphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, the 2018 midterm elections took place, and it saw the Democrats securing the House of Representatives while the Republicans expanded their majority in the Senate. MBA chief lobbyist Bill Kilmer will host a webinar this Wednesday, November 14th, for members of the Mortgage Action Alliance, which will break down the election. Also last week, voters defeated Prop 10 in California. The measure would have repealed state law that currently restricts rent control policies that local jurisdictions may impose on residential property. MBA has fought hard to defeat Prop 10, including partnering with the California Mortgage Bankers Association on a webinar and activating the Mortgage Action Alliance grassroots network. And finally, join MBA at the 2018 Summit on Diversity and Inclusion, November 27th and the 28th, here in Washington, D.C. The summit will provide valuable insight into implementing an inclusive workplace culture, ways to improve financial profitability, and tips for growing your access to a wider demographic market. That's it for this week on MBA's Mortgage Minute.
Check it out. Also, while you're there, make sure you're at the MBA website. Make sure you sign up for the Mortgage Action Alliance. Very important. We're kind of getting past convention season, but we've got the IMB convention coming up. I think it's San Francisco. Looking forward to that. Yeah, look at, he said some of that. Yeah, I know. If you knew how busy it is running this podcast for the switchboard and all of that, sometimes you get all the details and sometimes you don't. Anyway, one conference that I just got invited to speak at is the Power Originator Summit. It's being put on by AIM. Anthony Casa just asked me to speak at that event. That's going to be December 12th and 13th. It's going to be in the Philadelphia area. Looking forward to that. If you're not familiar, in fact, you're going to become familiar because we're going to be interviewing Anthony coming up in the near future on a podcast. We're recording it this week. I'm looking forward to airing it. There's some things going on in this new, it's like a resurrection of the old broker conference, the old National Mortgage Brokers Association. This one is, in fact, John Councilman is a part of this organization, and you're going to want to hear the story, folks. It's pretty compelling, some of the things they're doing. There is going to be a shift back to wholesale, to the likes of which I'm not sure this industry has seen before. And we're going to be talking about that in that interview, which is, again, in an upcoming podcast. Let's see here. I want to take a quick look at the digital business card. I always talk about this. If you're not checking out the digital business card, if you're handing out the old paper card, you know what, folks? It's just not working as well as this digital business card. I use this constantly at conferences, and I'm getting so much feedback. What's so nice about it is when you hand out a digital business card, you can put in videos and information about your services. It's so much more compelling. It's almost like having a website in your wallet. You just people are amazed at how quickly you can share information. Head over to our website and check out what is going on there with this new digital business card. Encourage you to consider it. It's a great tool. Want to get that word out. Also, the TM Spotlight, we've got Les Parker with another music parody. Again, Les mixes in music parodies amongst the message. A lot of people call and say, yeah, I get it. You look and you've been encouraging me to listen, starting to understand what he's trying to say here. It's actually pretty clever. So, Les, what you got for a music parody this week?
TM Spotlight Soundbite is brought to you by LoanLogic. Stocks would like to know if you've got the notion to rock the boat. Don't rock the boat, Nancy.
You got the notion. Rock the boat.
Americans lock the boat, and it won't rock the boat. Treasury yawned at the split decision that did not disturb the current economic sea. With the midterm settled, what happens? Gridlock and questions. Gridlock means low odds of a strong economy. Here are the big questions. Will a fiscal stimulus package become law? Will health care get reformed? Will deregulation continue? Will trade wars end? Will deficits grow? All the answers are yes, but they'll be designed by concession and commotion and without love and devotion.
Our love is like a ship.
These views are my own. Go to tmspotlight.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
Love and devotion.
You know what's most amazing about that, the music parody that he plugs into there, is if you talk to Les, he doesn't know anything about any of these songs. He doesn't follow the music or anything like that. He's just, how he pulls it together, it's amazing. I love it. That's good job, Les. And, of course, Gary Kentrebone, I always give him a shout-out because he's the one that pulls it all together, makes it work from an audio standpoint. So kudos to you, the team, there. And check out the TMSpotlight.com, signed up for Les's daily newsletter. A lot of good information there.
Let's run over to Open Mortgage, Scott Gordon with the Science of Sales. It's a very popular segment that we're having and featuring each week. Everyone wants to know, what is he saying? Yeah, a lot of feedback. This is a great way for advertisers. By the way, I always say, use this as an example when you're telling your message or trying to communicate. Do you want to knock on the door? Hi, I'm open for mortgage. I'd like to have you come and work for me. Or do you find a way of providing free information to someone so that they have insights as to what you're about and how you think? That's what Scott does. He does it extremely well. And I want you to listen to this segment of The Science of Sales.
Stories help customers relax and listen. They're memorable. They establish trust. And most importantly, they speak to the part of the brain where decisions are made. We make subconscious, emotional, and sometimes irrational decisions with one part of our brain. Then we justify those decisions with another. Stories provide depth and context to facts, which leads people to making secure and informed decisions. One poll found 30% of strangers are trustworthy. But when you asked what percentage of people you know, the median answer jumped to 70%. Telling a story is the most effective way to make someone feel like they know you. Stories provide glimpses into your world and invite your customers to tell you their stories. This cements trust between the parties, and once you have a customer's trust, you've usually got their business. A 2013 study found that only 1 in 5 sales calls provides enough stories to satisfy the customer. So why tell a story? Because it works. If this sounds too good to be true, it's not. It's just the science of sales.
Good job. Scott does a great job with these, and he's got a great team that supports him. If you're looking for a new home to originate loans, make more money, and also learn about the innovative, or I guess it's not so innovative. It's been around for a while, but it certainly will help your bottom line. That's reverse mortgages, and Open Mortgage does a great job. But check it out at openmortgage.com. Also, check out all the videos they have while there. Joe Farr, good to have you on the podcast as always. I know the markets are closed today, so nothing to report today, but get into what happened last week.
Well, there is some, the stock market kind of in a down day. It's down over 400 points. That's reversed just about all the gain that stocks had last week following the election. I'll get into that in a minute. But, yeah, so bond market's closed, stock market's open, and the stocks are down pretty heavily. So going straight to last week, Dave, it was really a quiet week for mortgage rates, even though there was a lot of activity to cause movement if it was going to. For the week, rates improved just a little bit, which was nice to see after a week of rates rising, a couple of weeks of rates rising. The Fed meeting had no real surprises in it. The statement was very similar to the statement from the September meeting. Everyone still expects another rate hike in December. So not a big market mover. Now, the election, you know, as that's described and as Rob talked about, it came out pretty much as you and I had talked about last week, where a split in the House and the Senate was going to be kind of a neutral, if you will, impact on mortgage rates. We did see MBS prices improve a little bit, and the stock market improved, you know, more than what we lost today. We're just now getting back to about where we were on Tuesday before the election results came out. But I think that was sort of, stock market was happy to get the election behind them. The results are now known, and that reduction of uncertainty was good for investors to feel like they could buy a little bit. Also, last week on Friday, the Producer Price Index came out. This was the October Producer Price Index, and it was a pretty significant surprise to the upside. It's a measure of inflation, so it makes it significant. But it's the minor measure as opposed to CPI and PCE, which are significant measures of inflation. And,
right.
And even though it surprised to the upside, it didn't have a big effect on mortgage rates. So the overall number for the Producer Price Index rose at a 2.9% annualized rate, whereas the core rose at 2.6% annualized rate. And as you know, both of those are higher than what the Fed is comfortable with on a long-term basis. So, you know, a little bit concerning, but the fact that it is PPI is volatile. A one-month jump is not a real concerning event for the market, so there wasn't a big movement. JOLTS came out last week. That was a September JOLTS, and it showed a small drop in job openings, but the drop came off of record highs for job openings, and so still a very healthy job market, as indicated
by the
report. Now, looking at this week, Dave, there are a couple big events. The Consumer Price Index is going to come out on Wednesday. Retail sales come out on Thursday. Both will come out at 8:30 Eastern time. Both are expected to show increases from September. And either of those, if the increase is much different from what's expected, or the decrease is much different than what's expected, could cause a significant market reaction. So we need to pay attention to those two events. Also, there's a pretty full slate of Fed speakers. I saw speakers every day this week on the calendar, notably Jerome Powell scheduled to speak in Dallas on Wednesday at 5. So that's my report for this week, Dave.
Are you going to be up there to listen to him? You should be invited there. Do they know how important you are?
Yeah, well, they lost my invitation in the mail, I guess.
Good report. Thanks so much. Appreciate it. Was anyone in your family, did they serve in the military? Did you serve in the military?
Well, my wife did.
Your wife did? Awesome. I just saw one of the one of the social media sites. I saw a post of all these women who were had at least one or two legs amputated because of injuries. And it says, hey, you know, everyone sees the guys and out there on the front lines, but there's a lot of women that's on there. So that reminds us to be grateful for our women veterans as well as for all veterans. So give your wife a thank you from us for her service. We're grateful. Very grateful for that. Good job. Good report.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it
so much. You bet. Let's go out to listen to our friends at Knowledge Coop to provide knowledgeable training in a fun way. Nathan?
At the Knowledge Coop, we work hard to create training that engages and encourages our audience. Once people are engaged in training, they are more likely to stay focused and retain the information that they need to know. So here's your training tip for the week. Next time you have an important policy or bit of knowledge you need to train, do it in short clips, and make sure you sprinkle it in with a little bit of humor. Video training is highly impactful, but only when done in the way we've been conditioned through TV. Videos should be no more than 5 minutes, should get to the point, and humor should be sprinkled through to emphasize the important points. Memories are more powerful when attached to an emotion. If you need help with your company's training, please reach out to us at knowledgecoop.com, and we'd be happy to assist. And that's your training minute from the Knowledge Coop, which strives for easy and fun training for the mortgage industry powered by a smart digital platform.
Yes, it is a smart digital platform, but most importantly, they've got some tools. But once you get material up there, you can be using it, repurposing it. There's just so many effective ways of doing training right now. And these guys at Knowledge Coop, Nathan and Ken Perry, that team are so creative. So be sure to go in. If you're looking for ways to innovate your training program, make it more effective, be sure to check them out. KnowledgeCoop.com, located up in the Pacific Northwest, just north of the river right there, separating between Portland, Oregon, and Vancouver, Washington State. Not Vancouver, B.C., Vancouver, Washington. Anyway, a quick update on Alice Alvey. She just texted me. Her flight was delayed, didn't have any chance. I mean, no Wi-Fi. Isn't it amazing how we get so spoiled with Wi-Fi these days? But anyway, she can't make it. Kind of chaotic there. She said there's no quiet space, and it would just be a lot of noise. So, Alice, safe travels. We'll miss having your segment today. Bottom line is there's not a lot to report on. I think we're going to be talking more about the politics, the fallout of the politics, what's happened. And I might just take a moment to talk about the event that happened this last week in Atlanta. Having Seth there and, of course, Phil, I respect both of these individuals so much and their companies and what they're doing in the industry. And there's just kind of an anticipation because of the election results that we're just going to have a lot more gridlock. You know, any chance of doing anything with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac over the next 2 years is probably gone. So the consensus or the thought that I heard from them, and all three of us were speaking, I'm hearing that consistently. But I think that's out the window and just not going to be happening. So anyway, major kudos to the Dems pulling off what I thought is a bit of a surprise. Now, a lot of people didn't say it was a surprise. I say, Dave, are you a Democrat? Now, we avoid politics on this podcast as best we can, but no, I probably would be identified as a Democrat if you want to know the truth. So anyway, I guess that's about the close. But I have a lot of friends who are real strong Democrats. I was just talking to Tony Moss, speaking of someone who sees the world differently politically, and I think that's one of the things that we have that we've developed with so many of our friends on the left or on the right. It's just civil discourse, and we've deteriorated from that so badly. And I think we need the mortgage industry to be leading the way on that. So, all right, enough on that. Alan, good to have you here, friend.
David Licken, good to be here. First, I just wanted to say
good.
Happy Veterans Day. Yeah, to all that have given their time and provided their service. I think we all know somebody who has served, so appreciate that.
Yeah.
Big news today, which you teed me off to, is Black Knight Financial buys Ernst & Company, or Ernst Publishing Company. And what they're doing at Black Knight is they're looking to create a unified source for near real-time closing data via their integrated loan origination system. So let's start first. If you don't know Ernst today, they track fee changes for the vast majority of the title and lending industries, and they guarantee accurate fee information for consumer disclosures per lending regulation. And they they claim to be the leading authority of land recording requirements for nearly three decades. And get this, since inception, which is around the 90s, they processed over 1 billion transactions.
Wow.
So, yeah, what does it all mean, David? Well, first, if you think about it, Black Knight is going to augment their fee engine with their capabilities. So they're going to have recording fees, transfer tax fees, inspection, property, and even title premium fees. It's a big deal because it gives them the ability to have all these fees when you need them at any point of the transaction and to drive automation. It's huge. A lot of times in the transaction today, you wind up having to call out either at the touch button of a processor, right, or a certain point of the transaction, or you're working through many third parties. So this gives them real-time access to that data whenever they need it. Rich Gagliano, president of Black Knight Financial, had an interesting statement that I wanted to mention. He said, by tightly integrating this technology and data into our origination product suite, we're able to better serve our existing clients. So think about all the servicing data they sit on top of, right? It's the very first thing that comes to mind. And when they talk about existing customers that Rich just mentioned, well, think about the other moves they've made, right? Their move with Heavy Water, with Motivity, all the analytics and the data mining they now have. All that servicing data I just mentioned, think of the opportunity that they can create for their customers and their partners having access, real-time access to that data. So what does it do? It improves the lending experience, right? And it goes way beyond the efficiency, David, way beyond having, you know, the self-service component, but it prepares the loan officer to have that real good conversation, that intelligent conversation with the borrower who's probably staring at all these fees at their loan estimate that was automatically generated for them on the point of sale.
Really interesting. That's really, really interesting. You know, Alan, I always have thought at different times, I used to think of Black Knight as this sleepy little company that, you know, just does the servicing. That's not at all the case. It hasn't been. And I encourage people to go back and listen to Shelley Leonard, the interview we did with her, as well as Sufi Safavi, as well as with Rich. There's a lot of good content that they've put out here. So that's just really interesting. That's fascinating. And again, really purposed, and I have a feeling there is a very – well, if you meet Shelley, you find out there's a very much of a definite plan that she has in mind for the company. Very exciting stuff. Anything else you got, bud?
Well, the only thing I'll do is I do want to tie it in. An MBA survey, you know, they have the chart of the week. Well, October 26th, so about two and a half weeks ago, they put out their technology spending levels. And this ties into what Black Knight's doing really well. Think about this. There are three major categories that technology spending has increased greater than 10%. You know who came in separate than the point of sale is customer relationship management. I think it was always high on prior surveys, but it is coming up to be higher because it's more than just the origination. It's the life of the customer. But now when you think about customers needing that hand touch, that connection to a human being, CRM or customer relationship management is critical to the transaction.
That's really interesting. Lots of good stuff. Alan's a great resource if you want to get a hold of him. Alan, how can people reach you if they want to talk to you about all this stuff? Again, that one comment you made about Optimal Blue now really purposely, intentionally going out to be the system of record.
Yeah.
He's really gotten some really interesting feedback. So how can people get a hold of you?
Yeah, a few people actually reached out to me about the topic, and it is an interesting one. And, you know, the moves that we're making in the industry today really are impactful now. You can reach me at Allen, A-L-L-E-N, at TMS-advisors.com. Appreciate it, David. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Good job. Well, we're going to take a quick break, listen to Jim Jump talk about the Arch MI product. It's been around for a little while now, but if you're not using it, you're missing out. Jim?
Hi, David. Arch MI is happy to be a proud sponsor of the program. Today, I'd like to let your listeners know about RateStar from Arch Mortgage Insurance. RateStar makes it easy to choose what type of mortgage insurance coverage your loan needs. Quotes are delivered in seconds and represent our most competitive Arch MI rates based on the strength and quality of the loan application. That's the power of RateStar. Getting a mortgage insurance quote has never been so powerful or so simple. And with that, I'll turn it back to you, David.
Appreciate it very much, Arch MI. Check them out at their website. I'm looking for some of the news and announcements that they've been publishing. Really interesting. Check out their website. There's some new stuff that's out about them, some of the press releases that they've published, new interesting data, some reports about the millennials. That one was issued in about a month ago, and it's getting some real interesting reads, so check it out. All right, folks, we're going to move on over to Andy Schell, the Profit Doctor. Andy, good to have you here with us today.
Hi, Dave. Happy Monday.
How are you doing? I kind of got sucked into this reading on the website of Arches about the millennials. I'm just so drawn to it. Which markets are going to be really tight, Andy? It's a fascinating topic that everyone says, we're so tired of hearing about millennials, but it has a big impact. But what you got for us, friend?
Well, you know, as baby boomers, we got to dominate for a long time, and now there's more millennials, as I understand it, than there are baby boomers.
Yeah.
Well, so a couple of quick things. First off, I've been, and a team of CPAs that I work with have been talking about the derivative asset overstatement because we count the pipeline and say it's worth more than it really is. They put it in profit. And what's happening now is agencies are calling us and saying, hey, wait a second. We're having companies fail even though they show profit. We're having companies that are showing good profit that are insolvent. How can this be? And we're saying, well, it's because when a loan is locked, the CPAs are saying it's worth 3%, and it's clearly not. So finally, we're getting more traction on that point, but there continues to be a lot of controversy on the whole thing. We can talk about that later. That gets boring really, really
fast.
Really
important. Well, it's not. With what we're going to be talking with Michael Huff later on, this is significant because the GSEs, the agencies, are all looking at the profitability. And if you have a major adjustment like that, you could find yourself, especially if you had a previous quarter loss and all of a sudden didn't pay attention to that, they didn't listen to you, they could find themselves with a second quarter loss. And Andy, you know what that triggers. It triggers the loss, potential loss of Fannie, Freddie, your approvals, your warehouse lines, and many investor relationships. It cannot be easily swept under the rug and ignored. That's what I'm trying to say.
That's right. All this stuff becomes a giant sucking vortex of badness.
Sucking vortex. There you go.
Oh,
That's true.
We want to avoid all that. So last week we talked about how to plan an uncertain market. So I was going to continue talking about that for the segment today. Part of dealing with an uncertain market, in addition to all the topics that the regulars talk about on the show, is you need to make certain you've identified your value proposition. What is it you're good at? We also want to avoid cash flow risks, so I wouldn't go out and buy a bunch of new stuff right now, especially if our balance sheet's not right and we've got a big asset on there that's never going to get converted to cash, so we want to be careful about that. And then we want to monitor everything, basically. We're going to have to watch everything that we do, be very cautious in how we do what we do. But we want to focus on the path to success. And I would say the path to success always includes, like we talked about last week, planning, measuring, and executing. So in today's segment, I want to talk about people and leadership a little bit because in times of turmoil, leadership really matters. I would say leadership always matters, but especially in times of rapid change is really when the academic world would say it's in the moment of rapid change when transformational leaders surface. And although I think there's elements of transformational leadership that occurs all the time. So without getting too deep into the weeds and that kind of stuff, when we talk about the environment today, we need people who are committed to the job, people who are good at doing their job. And what we don't want to hear is people say, well, that's not my job. We want people who are on board and are committed to doing whatever it needs to be done in order to help the company be successful. Unfortunately, today there's companies who have already failed, so there are some mortgage folks out there looking for jobs. So when we think about our company and we think about success, what is it that an employee who helps the company be successful look like? You know, are they attentive, compassionate, smart? Are they a hard worker? Are they resourceful? All of these activities, all these words define how we think about an employee. So in our company, as the leader, we need to think, okay, what is important of the characteristics for employees? When I ask that question to somebody, they'll say, well, I want a good processor, or I want a good shipper. Well, yeah, but those are technical skills. Somebody who's attentive and compassionate and smart and a hard worker can pretty much learn anything, even if they come in a little bit weak. So it's about the philosophy of the person. I know, Dave, you talk about this kind of stuff all the time. But in this time of change, we need to be aware of and cognizant of these kind of opportunities to get the right people on the bus, as Jim Collins would talk about, versatile, committed employees. I would also suggest that we have improvement plans for every originator. If they're not in the top tier, they need to have a plan to get there. And they may resist this, but you got to have a plan to get every originator doing one more loan. If every originator could just do one more loan, it may likely fix the dilemma that we're facing today. Also, we want to measure the activity of the staff, but that's not all of the formula. You know, this measurement thing is important, and I always talk about the ROI and the measurement, but it really comes down to, in this time of stress, accepting culture, driving culture, and that is established by the top. I know, Dave, you talk about this stuff all the time. And ultimately, it comes down to communicate a plan. So you got to have a plan. What's the vision going to be? And then show optimism and commitment as you communicate the plan, just like Scott Gordon said at the opener. It's about having a story. And part of casting vision, part of getting people buy-in, is to present a story about what the company is going to be like. So leadership must communicate their realistic vision for the future of the company and then make sure that the plan is distributed so that everybody gets to hear about the awesomeness that's coming. And it really matters how this is communicated, because words matter, tone matters. Having a solid belief in the success matters. It's also important to listen. So now is a time of leadership, and now is a time of coalescing the team to drive to a vision that keeps the company in business for the next 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, and on into the future. So there you go. That's my thoughts on dealing with a turbulent market. We've all been through this before, David.
I think you hit on a number of good points, and we're going to go back to some of those points when we get into the hot topic segment here in just a minute. So, Andy, good job. Appreciate a lot of wisdom there. Folks, we appreciate you being here. Yeah, it's good to have you. Appreciate Andy, everyone else. By the way, Andy, I think your dad was in the military, was he not? I mean, you and I both did not serve in the military.
We were either too young or too old.
So
my dad was in World War II right at the end. Thankfully for me, we did not invade Japan. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't be here today, because my dad would have been killed. And so thankfully he wasn't. So he was right at the end of World War II, and then he stayed in the Naval Reserve from the 40s all the way until the 60s, and at which point his reserve battalion was activated. He was 44 years old, an architect in Amarillo, Texas. I was 10 years old or 12 years old, whatever. And he gets shipped to Vietnam for a year to build an airport in Da Nang. While he's gone, his business fails. He was the lead architect. He was the guy that went out and got business. So he comes back to Amarillo, his business is gone, and he stays in the service and goes to California and Hawaii, which is where I went through junior high and high school, as my dad was a naval officer.
Yeah, you know, we look at the commitments our soldiers have made, and men and women, we're just so grateful for them. So I honor your dad, honor my dad, and again, all of anyone else who I've failed to bring this up when I'm here on the podcast today. I just so honoring all of them. So thank you, Andy. Appreciate that update. We just cannot remember enough about what they have, the contribution they made to us and to our lives. All right, folks, we're going to be right back with Michael Huff after this brief break from Black Knight.
As housing prices climb, U.S. homeowners are holding more capital equity than ever before. Effectively capturing the equity market could pose a unique challenge for lenders who may be limited by the capabilities of their current loan origination system or consumer lending platform. Lenders looking to streamline their home equity business processes can benefit from Black Knight's LoanSphere Empower loan origination system. Using this robust and intelligent technology, Empower can originate both first mortgages and home equity loans on the same system. This single configurable solution will help lenders improve margins, support regulatory requirements, and enhance customer satisfaction. To learn more about Empower, visit blackknightinc.com today.
Encourage you to check them out. Great company, obviously on the move. They're doing so much. Again, I tell you, go back, listen to Shelley Leonard's interview that we had, and then the one with Rich as well. Great stuff going on, and in this industry, these are exciting times, disconcerting times for many, and I just want to say, folks, make sure you're paying attention to the details in your business. As they say, the devil's in the details. But devil is not present in this podcast because we've got Michael Huff here, Jenny May, who's here to help you out, make sure you ever survive. You know, when you have good partnerships with companies like Jenny May, if you're fortunate enough to have gotten approved by Jenny May, and that is a real privilege and an honor for those that do have a Jenny May approval, they're here to help you. And I'm really excited that Michael has taken time out of his schedule joining us. Michael, good to have you on the podcast.
Thanks, Dave. Great to be with you. If I may, I'd like to start by wishing all my fellow veterans happy Veterans Day out there. But it's great to be with you, Dave. Look forward to the discussion.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, starting off with that. And I was going to say, did you serve in the military, Michael?
Or I did. I served in the Air Force.
Oh, you did? Well, thank you for your service. Really mean it. Awesome. Awesome. And it's appropriate then that we also have you here on this special day from the government representing Jenny May. And your responsibility there is government and stakeholder relations. And you're the head of all of that. So it's really important about communication. And one of the things I want to start out to make sure our listeners are aware of, Jenny May recently published a paper called the Jenny May 2020 Report. And listeners, if you are listening to this while you're mobile, take the time out to go back to the website and read the link. You'll see it under resources down at the bottom of the write-up of today's podcast. You'll see a link there, and you can click on it, and it brings up the 2020 initiative. But Michael, for those who may not be familiar with what Jenny May is doing in the 2020 Report, can you give us a little bit of insights into it?
Yeah, I'd love to. Thanks for posting that. I would encourage anybody who hasn't read it, just to reiterate what you said, Dave, to download it and take a quick read. It really maps out what our innovation and modernization efforts will be in the coming years. As we heard from Alan today, or the segment on video technology from last week's show, innovation and modernization is an important topic in the industry right now, and that would certainly also include digital mortgage, which we focus on in the paper, but it also includes modernization of our MBS platform, like the efforts to enhance user experience for the end users out there using Jenny May, or being able to do split pools and other advancements we're making on counterparty risk management.
So people may not understand what a split pool is. They may be getting it confused with what's going on over at Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac is a single issuance type strategy, and you're not a part of that. But what do you mean by split pools? Explain that.
Sure. So to take a step back, the fundamental operation of how the Jenny Mae MBS platform is administered is denominated at the pool level, not the loan level. So certification and collateral reporting is done at the pool level. Today, there can only be one issuer of record for a given pool, so that means pool servicing rights can't be redistributed among multiple issuers in a way that largely makes sense for a lot of parties in the industry. So this restriction, we think, may be preventing some institutions from investing more heavily in Jenny Mae MSRs, and which would increase liquidity in the space. So that leads us to we're actively exploring the you know, introducing loan level servicing transfers that would open up and increase liquidity for MSRs on our platform.
When you talk about digital mortgage, it's really encouraging to see that Ginnie Mae is stepping up. But I think Michael Bright, the new president, is really doing a lot to try to bring Ginnie Mae's innovation and everything to a new level. I think it's exciting that you're what you have going on about the digital mortgage. And we've certainly heard a lot about it. Can you talk more about what Ginnie Mae is specifically doing on that front?
Sure. Yeah, this is of course an exciting initiative that we're doing. We've heard from many in the industry, heard from folks at MBA Annual who are very excited about Ginnie Mae moving forward with this initiative, because a lot of people believe that this could be a catalyst to rapidly expand this sector of the market. So looking at the digital mortgage space, both the GSEs have already moved forward on their efforts. So many see Ginnie Mae as the final piece. And once mm-hmm. we're able to accept digital mortgages, many in the industry will then be able to justify investments needed to move forward in this direction for themselves, because now it's kind of hard for them to justify that investment when only two-thirds of the market are able to do so. So we're actively working on this as we speak, and we're tracking to launch a pilot project next year that would accept digital notes as collateral for the Ginnie Mae MBS. So we really think that this pilot project would be a perfect runway to incorporate digital fully into our program.
Yeah, that's true. But you also talk about counterparty risk, which leads me into the next question. We see mortgage rates at the highest level in 7 years. They're still low historical levels, and they look like they're going to continue to rise. What impact does higher mortgage rates have on Ginnie Mae business and its issuers?
So, as Joe mentioned in his market update, we do see higher interest rates, and higher mortgage rates have an effect on Ginnie Mae in several important ways. The first, with higher interest rates, we expect to see lower prepayments at our MBS, and investors certainly like to see lower prepayments, all else being equal. But second, with mortgage rates on the rise, home prices generally stable or rising, mortgage origination volume will be down for many of our issuers. In general, the mortgage volume tends to put pressure on liquidity of especially non-banks, which make up the largest part of our issuer base these days. So in light of the potential strain on liquidity, and we're certainly not saying we're seeing acute signs of strain at the moment, but we certainly are cognizant of that risk, and so we've opened up communications with our issuers so we can better understand their liquidity position. And like you mentioned in the opening, our goal is to work with our issuers to ensure the strength of the entire mortgage system. And third, in those conversations, we're asking our issuers to put themselves through a type of stress test. We really would encourage them to understand their business as only they can, and understand what delinquencies would do to their business. You know, we certainly expect that because of the way the Ginnie Mae program works, where issuers must continue to make P&I pass-through payments, even if borrower delinquencies are on the rise, the financial well-being of our issuers is essential.
You know, that's really important. Everyone understands about the stress test and what that does. Andy and I talk about that when we're out there consulting. But, you know, it goes beyond just self-testing that Ginnie Mae is encouraging issuers. Does Ginnie Mae have plans to implement a stress test program for its issues and do so in the near future?
The short answer is yes. So as you and your listeners know, the makeup of the market is much different than it was in 2008 when we had our last downturn. The mortgage market then was largely dominated by big depository institutions
right.
that were capitalized by deposits and had access to the Fed window if they ran into trouble. In today's market, while we benefit in diversification from having many more counterparties, it also comes with additional risk from those counterparties that are a little more thinly capitalized, and they don't have bank deposits or access to the Fed window. So stress testing to ensure the safety of our issuers is something that needs to be done, and you know, we're planning to move forward with it. However, we are working with the industry, and we will continue doing so to make it the most effective and thoughtful process possible to implement some type of stress testing program. We have been and will continue to engage with the industry as we move forward, and look forward to hearing feedback and hearing what issuers themselves are doing to stress test themselves and what they think best practices are for stress testing.
That is, well, it's going to cause for some stress. There's stress and there's testing, and then there's stress testing. So put the two together. It's causing some stress out there. Not that they're not aware of it. If they're looking, they're all paying attention to profitability. It's causing some real challenges there. It's encouraging that you're going to be publishing this. But I want to go over to Andy. When I say publishing, you're publishing some standards and even creating your own stress test. That's really good. Andy, you and I talk about the importance of stress testing all the time, how you need to stress test your business constantly. It came up on this past Thursday when Seth, Phil, and I were talking there. And it was really interesting to the degree that Seth and I found ourselves compelled to talk to the group about this. And Andy, talk about stress testing from an account standpoint, some of the elements that go into this.
Okay, thanks, Dave, and thanks, Michael, for enduring a question from me. So when we talk about stress tests, there's a lot of different variables that come to play, and it actually kind of depends on what industry you're in and if you're a depository mortgage lender or if you're an independent mortgage lender. And one of the key elements that drives stress test of an independent mortgage lender is liquidity. It's kind of like in real estate, it's location, 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 and for a mortgage bank, it's cash flow, cash flow, cash flow. And so while there's a bunch of other stuff to measure, you know, turn times and whatnot, which does drive cash flow, but ultimately we got to focus on cash flow, especially as Ginnie Mae issuers where we really don't have much of an option to be scheduled. We can't do actual, unlike Fannie Freddie, because they're the issuer. Ginnie Mae is not the issuer. So if you have to do advances and rates are rising and the economy slows and borrowers are struggling and you have to make the pool payment, how do you as Ginnie Mae evaluate not only the current position of a mortgage lender's cash capability to fund advances, but their future risk in measuring cash flow performance to fund advance risk?
Well, I would say there are a lot of elements that will be considered, you know, before we implement a quote-unquote stress test for our issuers. I would say there are a lot of good questions, a lot of good components that will go into it. And so that's one reason we'll also be engaging and working with the industry to get viewpoints and to determine the best practices before imposing or implementing anything. I would say that as we have said to issuers when we've met with them, not only when folks were in town for MBA annual this year, but you know, what we've said in many other cases, both publicly and to them directly, and we've said it here today, is we hope they're doing some form of stress testing on themselves. And so they can, just to make sure that an issuer can safely make it through a rough patch or a downturn. You know, we really think that's invaluable. You know, certainly a lender knowing his business better than anybody else, and I take what a great leader once told me, if you don't know your weaknesses, and I'm paraphrasing, if you don't know your weaknesses and how to break your own system, how can you be sure that you're doing enough that you won't break under some external stress? So, again, we would encourage lenders to know their financial position in any given market scenario and know what your pain points are and know what your thresholds are.
That's a great answer.
It is. Go ahead.
Can I go farther?
Yes, I know. I can feel it. Go. Questions are coming in, and Seth has got some questions he's teed up for me to ask you. Seth Brake from our good friend at Phoenix Capital. So I'm going to have some more questions. So it gives me a chance to make sure I get all these teed up right, Andy. So go ahead.
Okay. So, hey, Michael. So the great answer. Thank you. Now, this next question's a little bit more political, I guess. When we look at institutions from the perspective of risk management or cash flow risk management, ability to fulfill all obligations under the Ginnie Mae program, and Ted brought this up years ago in initially starting to raise the capital requirements, which a lot of people argued about, but that's part of where you get the stability and the risk management offset. The mitigation to risk is more capital, generally speaking, more capital in the form of cash or access to cash. So do you see, and here's the loaded question, and it's okay if you don't answer it, do you see Ginnie Mae continuing to raise capital standards for its issuers?
Well, I think the quick answer is it's probably too early to tell. You know, I would say when risk management comes on the table that all things are on the table. We're certainly looking at all components of what one would consider a stress test. You know, but as we're working through this process, we'll certainly want to talk to issuers and understand what their financial capabilities are and what their cash position is certainly always an important factor. You know, especially when, you know, issuers, historically when we've seen issuers run into trouble, you know, because of the Ginnie Mae program and they have to continue making pass-throughs even as delinquencies rise, you know, the liquidity crisis is generally what causes problems. They run out of cash to continue making pass-throughs. And
exactly.
And when there's when they run into financial difficulty, they also then have problems with their warehouse lines. And if those start getting pulled, that just exacerbates the liquidity problem that they're having. So it's cash and access to cash or cash equivalents is certainly an important component to any situation, whether it's a stress test that we're imposing or it's a stress test that you're looking at for your own company.
Yeah, exactly right. Thanks, Michael.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Seth from Phoenix Capital sent a couple of questions. One of them has to do with benchmarking, probably more than that. But is there a benchmark for margin or origination forecasts to use to help level set the results? And then also, interested in origination size, servicing portfolios, is there any benchmarking related to that? Are you aware of that? Are you guys using any? I think it's probably the gist. I mean, should we be aligning with a particular benchmarking that's out there, whether it be something from the MBA, or are you going to be publishing something?
Yeah, I would say that we will certainly have more communications with the industry as we move forward. It's probably a little bit too early to talk about specific details on benchmarking and the specific questions. That would be really an individual question based on financial wherewithal of a particular company and the type of business that a company is in. So it's, you know, it's going to be in a lot of cases a framework that then we can plug into a case by case basis that would work.
Right.
So we're probably, you know, talking about broader terms that then you know, because, you know, the way our industry is, as you know, is very very varied as far as the you know, from a depository institution to a small non-bank lender, that's a huge gulf between the financial capabilities of those two entities, and we're going to have to devise a program that will work for everyone. So in some ways, that may be where we don't want to be so overly prescriptive that we don't fully understand or be able to evaluate those broad disparities in the market participants.
You know, when you look at stress testing, you know, we've had some natural disasters. How does that play into your stress testing, especially when you look at forbearance as a result of a natural disaster? Any insights as to how you might be handling that?
We have a disaster program. So right now, just looking at it today, we always look at natural disasters, and we work as both a with industry groups, but also with our intergovernmental partners, because they have a lot to play in this as well. Not only FEMA and the Small Business Administration that manage loan programs for disaster assistance, but also FHA, VA, and USDA, and how they do the mitigation of disasters. So I would say that would also be part of the consideration, but it can also be seen as a separate consideration as well, because we have a program in place that addresses the disaster concerns, just as we saw in Florida and Georgia and Texas last year, and of course Puerto Rico.
Yeah. I'm looking at all the questions that Seth put prepared here. There's so many great ones, and we just flat rat out of time. So, Seth, my apologies. Good job. I think we just need to get you and Seth on a call here as this develops and you get a little bit further down. One question that would probably sum up all his questions is, when will we have more specifics on the 2020 as you start looking at some of the things that will be going into the stress testing or results of it?
As I mentioned before, some of the initiatives, like digital mortgage, are underway now. Others will be a little further out. Stress testing, we're starting the process, and we're engaging in conversations. So that will be that is underway, and we are certainly moving forward with that. But as these other initiatives, the pool splitting and the other initiatives that are in the paper will certainly be coming out, and you will hear about those. We certainly haven't been shy with putting out our initiatives, and look forward to doing that more. But again, if I can make one more plug, if you haven't read the Genie 2020 paper, I would encourage you to do so. It really will show you where we're headed. And if you indulge me for just one moment longer, if you're willing, Dave, I'm happy for you to post my contact information on the site for anyone who, after reading the Genie paper or listening to this podcast, has additional questions, including Seth. I'm always happy to chat. But if you will, please put my contact information on, and anyone listening that has questions,
we will
feel free to reach out.
We will do that. One last question. It is Veterans Day, and I know Jenny May has been in the news about VA mortgages on an ongoing efforts to stop loan churning. Can you give us an update on these efforts?
Yeah, and as I mentioned before, as a veteran and someone who has many family members who are also veterans, and I have a VA home loan in my house, this is something that is very near and dear to my heart. And this is something, without getting into too many details on it, it's something that many know we've been working on for the past several years, trying to get a handle on this issue. And the way we see it is that there are some behaviors in the market that have caused abnormally high prepay speeds in our securities. Yeah. And this has two results. So when there's abnormally high prepay speeds that it's tough for the investor community to model, they're unwilling to buy Ginnie Mae securities, or they trade them at a lower price. And when they trade them at a lower price, it causes higher interest rates for veterans and all other borrowers that rely on the Ginnie Mae secondary market for financing. So people will continue hearing about our efforts there. We'll continue working with VA and with Congress to ensure we get a handle on this and protect protect the integrity of the Ginnie Mae security, which is our fundamental responsibility.
Well, again, thank you so much for being here, especially with you being a veteran. I want to honor you for your service and then also all that Ginnie Mae is doing to keep the veteran loan program at the lowest possible rates. I think that's a really, really important initiative. I want to encourage you to start, as things develop, we want to start posting with regularity, I mean, monthly or as often, even more so if you want, as things develop. It's so important that we be a part of helping you get the message out and what's going on, and we're here for you. We appreciate it, Brent.
Thank you, David. Look forward to talking further and further engaging on whatever topics that your listeners find of benefit. So thank you for inviting me on. It was great talking to you.
It was a great time. Say hi to Michael Bright, Michael Drain, and now we've just heard from Michael Huff, the three Michaels. Thank you again for coming on, folks. It's been a pleasure. We've had as our special guest Michael Huff, who is with Ginnie Mae. Again, check out the link in our podcast where it is the Ginnie Mae 2020 report. It's a roadmap for sustaining low-cost home ownership. It's such an important program, and it's so important that you be informed of what's going on. Appreciate you being part of the podcast, telling others about it. Special thank you and shout-out again goes to our sponsors, Arch MI, Black Knight, Open Mortgage, MBA, Lenders One, Mortgage Collaborative, Velma, The Knowledge Coop, and Vidyard. Look forward to having you back next week, everybody. Have a great week, and thank you for telling others about this podcast.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.